listening to the cycling podcast De Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour,
the home of cycling with character.
Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run. Stage 2. Today we are in Calpe.
I'm in Calpe, about a couple of kilometres from the finish line. The late afternoon sunshine is casting ever increasingly long shadows across the road. I can just see the famous rock of Calpe behind the tower blocks there, and I'm waiting for the lead group, which have really disrupted the race this afternoon in the final 25 kilometres and turned the Vuelta on its head. We perhaps weren't expecting such significant general classification action this afternoon, but the riders have surprised us, and well, let's see who comes round the corner in a moment. Well, there is a rider in blue, and that can only be Nairo Quintana, and he's just ahead of Nicholas Roach, Rigoberto Urán, Primoz Roglic, Fabio Aru, and Mikel Nieve trying to get on terms. Wow, what a finale. We shall have to see what happens on the finish line. Well, Nairo Quintana did hold on to win stage 2 of the Vuelta a España, and there's a new man in the red jersey too. My name's Lionel Burney, and I am outside a bar in bustling Altea, and I'm joined on the line by Richard Moore.
I thought you were going to say...
Making your Vuelta debut.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, my name is Lionel Burney and I am in the red jersey. That's what I was expecting there, Lionel.
No, I'm not in the red jersey, Richard. May have a slightly red face this evening. Stood in the sun for quite a long time today without adequate sun protection.
Will you ever learn?
Left my hat in the press room, but there we are. Oh. There we are. These things happen.
Oh, dear. Happen. Well... Yeah, you're in Spain, Lionel. I'm in London, and we're doing it like this for the first few days at least. I come out there next Saturday, but quite a stage today, wasn't it?
Well, it was. It was not really what we were led to believe would happen today. Even after the team time trial yesterday, a few riders were asked whether today would signal the start of the GC battle, and well, one rider who wasn't expecting today to be all that significant from a general classification point of view was Theo Gegenhart of Team Ineos, who dismissed the idea that today was a proper GC day, but that isn't really how it turned out. Stage 2 went from Benidorm to Calpe, by Vuelta standards quite a long one, just under 200 kilometres long, and the final 25 or so kilometres were really fierce and shook up the Vuelta as a stellar group of six got away to race for the stage and the red jersey. But before that, at the start, there was a tribute to the Belgian rider Bjorg Lambrecht, who died following a crash at the Tour of Poland earlier this month, and his Lotto Soudal teammate Sander Armé paid his own tribute by getting into the first breakaway of the day. He was joined by Angel Madrazo of the Burgos BH team, and they in turn were joined by Jonathan Lastra of Caja Rural and Katusha's Willie Smith, and the four of them got about 7 minutes lead at one point. Bora Hansgrohe spent quite a bit of time pegging that and then finally reducing the lead. And Armé was the last rider standing. He was caught with around 31 kilometres to go. And, well, it all kicked off on the Alto de Puig Llorença, where Alejandro Valverde was one of the riders to show at the front in his World Champions jersey. Hugh Carthy and the EF Education First team were also very prominent. And all of that aggression forced six riders away, including the eventual stage winner, Nairo Quintana, Rigoberto Urán, Primoz Roglic and Fabio Aru, who both fell in yesterday's team time trial, were up there, and the other two riders were Mikel Nieve of Mitchelton Scott and Nicholas Roach of Sunweb. They worked really well together, and the group behind, which contained the red jersey Miguel Ángel López, never really had a chance of getting on terms. And at the finish, Quintana clipped away and soloed to the win, and Roach took the sprint for second place, and his reward for that was the red jersey. The second time he's had the red jersey in the Vuelta, the last time was back in 2013. Not a great day for Steven Kruiswijk. who lost touch on the climb and conceded 1 minute 43. And an even worse day for Team Ineos' GC hopes, because Theo Gegenhardt and Wout Poels were almost 10 minutes down. So Roach is in the red jersey by a couple of seconds. Rigoberto Urán is up to third place at 8 seconds. And tomorrow's stage, hilly again, but does at least offer the sprinters a chance. In this episode, we will hear a bit of reaction to today's stage from notably Luke Roberts, the sports director at Sunweb, and Hugh Carthy, who helped set up Urán's move to get away. We'll also have the second instalments of the diaries from James Knox and Nick Schultz.
The fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with Cat. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our headline sponsor, again helping us to cover this Vuelta a España. And well, you're out there, Lionel. I'm not there yet. I was on a delayed plane today, which meant I had to catch up with the stage after the stage had finished. But thanks very much for a very comprehensive tale of the etapa there, because I really that filled in a few little blanks for me. But you mentioned one or two riders had dismissed today as a GC day. Another one was Stephen Kruijswijk, actually, who didn't see any chance today of taking back any of the time they lost on stage one. And because I couldn't join you, by the way, for stage one, I read that a British holidaymaker's paddling pool is to blame for the crashes.
No.
And when I read that, I immediately thought of you, Lionel, because I know you've got your bucket and spade, but I wasn't sure if you were taking your paddling pool as well.
I was crouching by the side of the road, filling my paddling pool, and the hose just escaped from me and doused
like
the road.
Like a dropped
very
hose.
Sorry about that. No. Apparently, it was a broken hose that caused some water to rush onto the road. And of course, yeah. Well, as you know, if you've ever ridden around these areas or in a training camp, it can be when the roads are very dry for a lot of the time, and then suddenly are wet. That change can be really significant in terms of the way that the tyres stick to the road. So, an unfortunate one for Jumbo-Visma. But Roglic picked himself up literally today and gained some time. And that was an amazing group to get away, wasn't it? Such aggressive racing on that final climb. Real sort of edge of the seat stuff watching. And the way that the gap just stayed where it was, and in fact edged up a little bit, just because the chase behind wasn't all that coherent. Again, just shows you on those kinds of roads how much easier it is, relatively speaking, if you're in a group of six compared to if you're in a group of 20, 30 or 40 riders.
Well, it was such a Vuelta stage, wasn't it, really? I described the Vuelta as a firecracker in the podcast, I think, last week, and it's not got that same rhythm to it that certainly the Tour de France has, maybe less so the Giro, but you just don't know what to expect any day. And there was talk of today being a sprinter stage, or certainly one for somebody like Gilbert, maybe, a stage hunter rather than a GC rider. So of all people to win, Nairo Quintana on his own was perhaps the least expected outcome, I would have thought. But Valverde did a terrific job setting him up, if that's what he was doing. He was maybe, you know, he's in the category of Gilbert as maybe somebody who would have fancied the stage today as well. But he was very, very strong indeed. I think we're going to hear later on about the Astana situation today and the fact that Miguel Angel Lopez, the red jersey, was just so isolated. And really you felt that the guys with him in that chasing group were taking advantage of his isolation a little bit. And that obviously benefited the riders up front. But it was a really strong group. And, you know, we've already seen there a few riders who, you know, could become the riders to beat at this Vuelta. Quintana, Urán, Roglic in particular looked incredibly strong. But it's still so early, isn't it? And yet, if you look at the Giro this year, when Carapaz won that stage very early on, and then Alaphilippe won stage three, didn't he, at the Tour de France, and became the story of that race. We are seeing races follow sort of unfamiliar patterns, but the Vuelta, most of all, tends to do that.
Well, I think the course lends itself, doesn't it? Especially around here where, there was a huge amount of climbing today. I think, you know, 3,000 plus metres climbing for what is not even really described as a anything more than a sort of a gently hilly day. And the fact that the run in from the top of that climb was, you know, there was a bit of a descent, and then the flat finish in Calpe, hugely deceptive, because there was still some climbing to do after that last hill, or the last significant hill. But you wouldn't have looked at that on paper as a Nairo Quintana day. And for that, you have to give him great credit for really, you know, racing properly and drawing out other people, Uran, Roglic, even Fabio Aru, the first sort of, you know, the first signs of a recovery from him. Especially impressive considering he and his UAE Team Emirates squad hit the deck yesterday in the team time trial as well. So really exciting, and I think bodes well for the rest of this week. We've got another couple of days a bit like this coming up, and then there's proper climbing with some uphill finishes later on in the week. And well, as we've seen in the Vuelta in the past, there isn't really a lot of chance to relax. There isn't the opportunity for a team to sort of strangle the life out of the race. It's not as controlled as the Tour de France or even as the Giro was this year, because, you know, that was quite a slow burn, wasn't it? It didn't really get much beyond a sort of 5 or 6 out of 10 in terms of the you know, getting out of control. Certainly once Movistar found themselves in such a strong position. So this is a completely different kettle of fish, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, what was surprising, I think we'll hear from Luke Roberts later in the episode, the Sunweb sports director, and that team, and so many teams know those roads and they know that climb incredibly well. So there wouldn't have been any element of surprise about the climb today. So many teams train in that area. It's a familiar training climb for a lot of them. So you have to think that what happened was just what we saw, was just the strongest riders come to the front. And, you know, a few surprising names to be missing from that. But enough riders in there who all appeared sort of equally strong to suggest that, you know, it has the makings of a decent race, this. The big surprise, apart from Astana, Team Ineos, you know, who came in with Teo Gegenhardt and Wout Poels as leaders, and both of them lost over 9 minutes. So I think definitely a mission tomorrow to maybe find out. I'm directing things from afar here, but I'd love to find out what exactly happened to them today. And you know, and interestingly, and I don't know if this is significant or not, but they're one of the few teams who have never had a training camp in Calpe or in that part of the world. The first training camp they ever ran was in Valencia, just along the road. That was in 2010, and since then they've spent all their winters in Mallorca. So I don't know if it's significant or not, but they are a team who wouldn't necessarily have known those roads, perhaps as well as some of the other teams.
I did have a chat at the finish to Team Ineos sports director Nicolas Portal, who, well, when Ineos, Team Sky as they were before, when they have a bad day, they do tend to keep quite tight-lipped in the immediate aftermath. They always default to a kind of, oh, we don't really know what happened, we have to debrief and ask the riders, and that's fair enough. But I mean, I did ask whether it was a case of Gegenhardt and Poels being in a poor position on the climb, or whether they weren't expecting it to kick off quite as significantly as it did. Portal sort of played that down, and while he didn't say it, so I don't want to put words in his mouth, he kind of led me away from it being a kind of racing mistake and more to whether or not they had the legs to be up at the front when it mattered, and be where they needed to be at that time, rather than actually being caught out. So you're right, I will try to find out from their point of view in the coming days what went wrong. But one thing, not trying to make Ineos's excuses for them, but I did suggest to Portal that certainly in the case of Gegenhardt, this does kind of release him a little bit. Losing nearly 10 minutes means that the GC, certainly in terms of a really high finish, is completely, well, more or less completely over. But it does free him up to ride with a little bit more, a bit more relaxed. Doesn't have to ride in that defensive way, trying to defend a position in, you know, the top 10 or top 15. So we might actually see a more offensive race from Gegenhardt and Poels as it goes on. And for certainly for Teo Gegenhardt's perspective as a young rider, who we've really not seen the best of in Grand Tours yet, that might benefit him more than trying to ride a conventional, safe, solid GC result. We might see him, stretch his legs a bit and spread his wings and try a few things out. So, you know, that is putting a positive on what's not been a great day for their GC ambitions. But I guess when they do debrief, that's pretty much what they have to do.
Let's hear from our rider diary, shall we? I really enjoyed their first installments last night. Nick Schultz of Mitchelton Scott and James Knox of De Koenig Quickstep, who was wearing the best young rider's jersey today, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. That's a new jersey in the Vuelta, the white jersey. In the past, the recent years, it's been a jersey for the combination classification, which is a sort of an amalgam of all the other classifications, and tends to be worn by generally somebody who's very high up overall, or often perhaps even the race leader. I remember we talked to Fran Reyes about this. Why does the Vuelta have a combination classification rather than a young riders classification? And he said that it's possibly a sponsor's requirement that they want a proper big name rider to be wearing the jersey rather than perhaps a lesser known rider. But it strikes me as odd that the Vuelta, which is such a proving ground, a first opportunity for so many young riders at Grand Tour level, that they don't have or haven't had a leader's jersey for the best young rider. So I think a long overdue addition. And as you say, Rich, James Knox was wearing it today because Miguel Angel Lopez was in the red jersey. But I agree with you. Both James and Nick are off to a flyer in terms of conveying their thoughts about what's been going on in their races. So let's hear about what happened to them on stage two. First, James Knox and then Nick Schultz.
Stage two of the Vuelta done. A tough day, hot day. It was always going to be a hard one with Cumbre del Sol in the finish there and a lot of guys. Yeah, I guess we always knew someone was going to take it on, and real select group over the top. I was sort of caught flapping off the back of that front group, and I just didn't have the legs to stay with them, and then that was it. I was group chasing behind, and then more and more guys came back, and I think in the end we finished just like 2 minutes back. It is what it is. Can't really be too disappointed. A lot of quality guys up front today. Still a special day. I got to wear a jersey in a Grand Tour. I'm the first Cymru to do that. I like to put that in there. That's a real honour. The whole experience was fantastic, to be honest. You got a lot of nice comments from guys in the bunch, made to feel a little bit special at the sign on and stuff. And I know it wasn't mine, it was Miguel Angel Lopez's jersey that I was just taking care of for the day, but still, it's pretty special wearing a jersey in a Grand Tour. So I'll savour that no matter what, even if it was just for today. Plenty more to come. Important day for us boys tomorrow. We're all up for a sprint, hopefully get into it.
So the first stage of first road stage, I should say, is behind us now. It was a very hot one, quite a hard parkour, really undulating, quite narrow roads, twisting and turning the whole day, with a brutal climb up the Cumbre del Sol at about 30k to go, which really split the race to bits. From a team perspective, we had Nieve finish sixth on the stage after an unfortunate mishap on the final roundabout, where he nearly decked it from what I've heard. So that was a bit of bad luck there, but great for him to be up the road, and I think that took a lot of pressure off Esteban back in the sort of main, in the red jersey group, I guess you could say, with Lopez. Coming into the climb there at 30k to go, our objective was to make sure that Mikel and Esteban were in good position, which they were. So there was a lot of work done by most of us in the team to try and achieve that goal. But once we got onto the climb, on a personal note, my legs weren't that great, so my job essentially finished there, and I rode into the finish as easy as possible with a pretty big group. And then I was just hearing the odd radio update, which was always positive. There was then some shattering news when we walked onto the bus, to find out that Australia had lost the Ashes, the test match in the Ashes today. Sounds like a super innings from Ben Stokes, saved the game for England, so I guess you can only take your hats off to them. But it's a good way to get outside the bubble, following other sports a little bit as well. And now we're just on the transfer home, which is another quite a long one, an hour and a half or so, And then I'll be back into that routine of eating, massage and sleep.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That said, PK, to remind me to tell you that this episode of our Vuelta coverage is sponsored by Roca. Lionel, your Roca sunglasses must be coming in handy in the Spanish sunshine.
They really are, Richard. Yes, very handy indeed. Well, we're going to be hearing a bit about Roca during the Vuelta. Roca was founded in a garage in Austin, Texas in 2013 with the mission to create the world's finest eyewear, which makes Roca the same age as the cycling podcast. And haven't we come a long way in the 6 years since? They have developed more than 30 patents and now have Roca wearing...
How many patents have we developed, Lionel?
We haven't developed any patents, I don't think. So no. we're lagging behind on that score. And we also don't have anyone in the peloton wearing our sunglasses, but Roca do. They've got riders who've won stages of the Tour de France, won the leader's jersey in the Vuelta and the Giro, and they've even conquered the gravel at Dirty Kanza. And in fact, one of the favourites for this Vuelta, Miguel Angel Lopez...
Superman.
Well, he rides for Astana, of course, and he wears Roca sunglasses, and they're really striking, the model of glasses that Lopez has chosen. He wears the CP1X frames in white, makes him very easy to spot in the peloton. Other riders who wear Roca include Dan Martin, Nicky Terpstra, Magnus Cort, and the Bowles Dolman team. And as I say, we'll be telling you more about Roca's sunglasses as the Vuelta go on. Roca say that theirs are the lightest, most advanced eyewear in the peloton, and if you want to get 20% off your order and check out the full range of sunglasses, go to roca.com/Vuelta. That's roca.com/Vuelta. And Roca is spelt R-O-K-A.
As worn by superheroes.
And me. Do I count as a superhero? A little bit earlier this evening, I caught up with Daniel Freeb at his hillside hacienda. Hola, Daniel.
Hola, buenas tardes.
Where are we? I don't really know where we are.
We're in Altea. We're close to Calpe, where the stage finished today. Between Calpe and Benidorm. We spent the afternoon in Benidorm, Napalm, preparing a feature for ITV. There were football games on, and the bars were packed. I found out a bit, some interesting stuff about Benidorm's history. There's a story which has turned into a bit of a heavily embroidered legend about how Benidorm became Benidorm, involving bikinis. Very much enjoyed reporting on that this afternoon.
Is this the young hip mayor, Zaragoza, who basically ripped up the planning law and allowed anyone to do anything, and all the skyscrapers, they're not really skyscrapers, are they, but tower blocks sprung up, didn't they, in the 50s. And then Alicante Airport opened in 67, and that meant that the British started coming en masse for their summer holidays.
Correct, Lionel. And I think it's about 10 million, 11 million visitors a year now to Benidorm. Of course, as referenced in my piece for ITV today, a lady last year went to Benidorm on holiday and complained to her travel agency, asked for a refund because there were too many Spaniards in Benidorm.
Well, the funny thing about Benidorm is the official population is pretty small. It's only about 65,000-66,000 people are officially resident of Benidorm, but there's accommodation for probably 3, 4, 5 times that number of people, a lot of it in the sky. All a bit J.G. Ballard for me, some of the high-rise buildings. But let's talk about the Vuelta, because the thing that struck me yesterday about the team time trial was that Astana put Miguel Angel Lopez on the front to take the red jersey. I thought this was...
I'm not sure. What were you... By Astana and Miguel Angel Lopez, you mean Superman and the Whalers, as they shall officially be known on the podcast, no?
Oh, this has grown a life of its own. But isn't the convention normally, if you've got a proper bona fide GC rider, you tend to normally let one of the lesser lights cross the line first and take the pressure of the leader's jersey in these situations, and they didn't do that. I was quite puzzled by that.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to a Superman at the finish yesterday in the mix zone. He said that it was a sort of coincidence, happened kind of by accident. Gorka Izaguirre came into the last corner, I think, and then Superman happened to be behind him. and Superman crossed the line first. It was interesting. It was the sort of planning that went into that from a few teams yesterday, a few teams that thought they might have a chance. Jumbo-Visma, I think, had a plan for either Robert Hasing or Tony Martin. I know for a fact that it wasn't Roglic, Kreiswijk or George Bennett who was supposed to cross the line first for them. I think they wanted, probably for sort of sentimental reasons, Hasing and Martin both coming to the end of their careers. They wanted them to have the red jersey. But yeah, Superman, I mean, he hadn't had the leader's jersey in a major tour, so it was a big thing for him. And, you know, I mean, I've seen him a fair amount now in sort of mixed zones, and he can look a little bit sort of set upon, mainly because there's a huge Colombian media presence, particularly at this race, at the Vuelta. And it's always interesting observing the dynamic between the Colombian media and the Colombian riders. Not always exactly what you'd expect. And I think the riders feel an awful lot of pressure. They feel as though they're really carrying the weight of a nation. But Superman, it's a job to keep this up, isn't it?
It's a tick. It's become a vocal tick, Daniel. You can't help it now.
But that is what they call him. And as I pointed out to some people on Twitter, that is, in fact, how they address him. And I felt very uncomfortable actually using his name the last couple of days when I've spoken to him. I think tomorrow I'm going to go with the Superman. So, he hasn't had the leader's jersey in a major tour. And he had a huge, yesterday he was wearing a huge smile. He was absolutely thrilled. He seemed absolutely thrilled to me to have the red jersey. And you know, maybe it was as simple as that. It was something that he felt he needed to tick off. I think he's going very well as well. He's got great legs. I mean, even today when he was sort of abandoned by his team or they couldn't support him, he did a lot of work on the front, didn't he? And I think, in spite of the fact that he lost a lot of time, I think even the amount of work he did on the front told us how well he's actually going.
Do you not think Astana, I mean, with all that firepower in that team, the problem is that it's set up to ride very fast in relatively straight lines, and there was none of that this afternoon in the run-up to the final climb itself, and then afterwards there was no time to recover the losses on the climb, and it was every man for himself in that second group.
Well, apparently what happened was that Jon Izagirre lost, he had a, I can't remember if there was a puncture or some kind of mechanical, and 3 or 4 kilometres before the start of the main climb in the finale, the Cumbre del Sol, and they sent guys back to help him, and Superman said that was because they're also thinking about Izaguirre's GC position. They might want to use him later, they might want to sort of play with the two of them. Some alarm bells did start ringing for me when I saw Dario Cataldo. Teams do now in Grand Tours, they sort of, you know, they rotate their mountain domestiques. So it looked like Cataldo was sort of given a day off today, and I thought, that was slightly curious. But maybe they underestimated today. I mean, I think I underestimated it. A lot of people underestimated it. But then if you looked at the statistics of the climb, the riders were calling it the Cumbre del Sol climb, which is, you know, what we've seen it referred to in the Vuelta before, but it was something else on the road book. But it was 3 kilometres at 9.5% average. I mean, that's like 2 La Redoutes. So, you know, I kind of feel a little bit, we should all feel a little bit stupid for thinking that someone like Philippe Gilbert was going to win the stage and get the jersey, because he was really nowhere near.
Well, no, worse than that. I mean, I thought that just looking at the road book, thought that somebody like Sam Bennett would just get over there a bit like we've seen him do in other races and be there at the finish, but actually it was a proper race. On the Colombians, I mean, the Colombian presence here is absolutely amazing, and at least they're divided out amongst several team buses, but they drown me out. When I'm outside the team bus, they're just chanting in my ear. I can't hear myself think. Whether it's EF Education First for Uran or Chavez for Mitchelton Scott, Superman for
Nido Man.
Oh, let's not.
That is also a thing. Don't pretend that's not a thing. That is a huge thing. Nido Man, Superman.
Well, we've heard the Colombian media how impartial they are when covering their riders after Bernal's win at the Tour de France.
there was a moment at the Tour de France on the Tourmalet when I was waiting with one of our Colombian colleagues. I can't remember which channel he works for, but we were waiting anti-doping. We knew that Quintana was in there, and I needed a quote from Quintana, and so did this colleague. And Quintana came out, and you know, the light was fading. It was getting towards 8 o'clock, and yeah, so obviously, you know, the sort of convention in that situation is that you defer to the home media of the rider. So I let the Colombian gentleman go first. And all he wanted to ask Quintana in inverted commas was, "Nairo, you do wonderful things for the nation of Colombia. Thank you." That's all he wanted to say. And this was broadcast live on Colombian TV. Didn't have any questions. Just wanted to say thank you to Nairo.
Well, Nairo Quintana did wonderful things for the nation of Colombia today, didn't he?
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Lovely to hear again from Daniel there. And, well, a big thank you to Science in Sport for their continued support of the Cycling Podcast. You can still get 25% off at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. Not going to ask you to do your robot impression, Lionel, because I can't see whether or not you're doing the hand movements, which are so essential to the comedy of that particular act.
Well, I mentioned yesterday that a listener promised...
I did listen last night, you know.
Let's not mention last night. A listener contacted us and said that if I promised to do the robot arm movements in conjunction with the SISCP25 discount code, he would buy 2 tickets to our event in Bristol on condition that I do the movement on stage, and I'm happy to do that. And so Robert W. Chutzpah 84 on Twitter, he, thank you very much for buying a couple of tickets to our event in Bristol. We shall see you there.
Oh, nice. nice chutzpah. Well, Lionel, before we wrap things up, we've got a couple of interviews to hear, haven't we, from the finish today. I mean, we haven't spoken much about Nicholas Roach, who's in the red jersey. And, you know, he was second on the stage as well. And difficult to know. I mean, he'll be very happy to be in the red jersey, but also he definitely was the rider with the best chance of winning that stage. And he must be kind of kicking himself a little bit that Quintana managed to clip off and nobody really went after him. I guess, you know, the other riders there, Roglic, Uran, Aru, were riding for, I think, GC. Nieve was the guy I thought might well be interested in the stage, but he, as you mentioned earlier, almost came off on a roundabout, and that really interrupted his flow, didn't it? He kind of dropped off the back at that point. But, you know, Roach was the one guy in there not just going for red jersey but for the stage win as well, and I think Quintana got the element of surprise, and I'm sure Roach will be happy, especially if he can sort of prolong his stay in the red jersey, which he's probably got a decent chance of doing, I would think.
Well, let's hear from Sunweb's sports director Luke Roberts, who I spoke to at the finish. Lou, you're just saying slightly in two minds, but you've come up with the red jersey today.
Yeah, our main goal here is to do a good GC result with Wilco, and when some good contenders are away off the front, we don't want to give away too many seconds. But to have Nico there, you know, a fast guy, one of the fastest in that group, capable of winning the stage, and you think you're in two minds. Do we, you know, continue on for the stage win or play it defensive from there? But, yeah, I mean, Nico was a good chance for the stage win. I wanted to give him the opportunity there. He went for it. It was unfortunate Quintana got the gap. And on the other hand, we also know that taking the stage win would also consolidate the jersey for him. But I really hope Nico could pick up that stage victory. He deserves it, especially the way he rode the Tour and take second place. Unfortunate for him to miss the stage win, but the bonus of the red jersey is a huge bonus for him. So he'll be really happy.
We weren't necessarily expecting quite so much GC-type action at the end of today's stage. I mean, people were saying if some of the sprinters could hang in, maybe it would come down to a bigger group. But that last climb, I mean, did you know that it was that difficult or that it would have that effect?
Yeah, I knew how difficult the last climb was. We're often here for training camps in that hotel right there. So I always go for holidays here at the foot of that climb. So I knew it really well. It also comes down to how they race it. Worst case scenario for the sprinters was that a strong group of several riders get off the front and it's a hard chase to bring them back, then they don't have a chance to come back. if it was a bigger group over the top and not a it was a bit, you know, a bit more under control, then perhaps a group of sprinters could have come back and we might have seen 60 or 80 riders at the finish here. But yeah, just the six rider, the strength of that six rider group, you know, the leader being back in the second group, some other GC contenders back in a fourth group, made it race on from the top.
Just a word on Nicolas Roach, because you say, you know, how well he rode at the Tour de France, a very difficult Tour de France really, without having the GC focus that perhaps he would have hoped for. How has he kind of settled into the team, and what sort of role does he play in the team? I guess all the guys will be pretty delighted for him that he's got the jersey.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Tour, we had the approach of the stage victories. Nico, he was in quite a few breakaways. He was doing a really good job getting into the breakaways. He had good shape, but unfortunately all the pieces didn't come together for him for that stage win. But you know, when I seen him out the front there today, I was really hoping he could land one. But here we have the GC focus. It's more what he's accustomed to. Feel more at home than racing the way we did at the Tour. But showing he's got great condition again, so you know, I'm sure together with him and Wilco, we can also be out there in the pointy end of things in the mountains.
Well, as you heard from Luke Roberts there, Sunweb were playing a canny game there. They wanted the break to stay away, but they didn't want it to gain too much time because they want to keep Wilco Kelderman very well placed overall, and he's their longer-term prospect for the GC. But Nicolas Roach has always done well in the Vuelta. Sixth overall in 2010, admittedly a long time ago now. Fifth overall in 2013 when he last wore the red jersey. He talked about how he's, you know, often been in the hunt for stages. This is his ninth Vuelta, and his average finishing position is 16.5. I know you can't finish 16 and a half in a Grand Tour, but when you consider one of those results was 40th, that gives you a measure of the consistency that he has in the Vuelta. And I think it's one of the Grand Tours that is ideally designed for him, really, isn't it? Shorter, punchier climbs, not typically quite as high and long as the Tour de France or the Giro. Yeah, I agree with you, Rich. He probably was the best bet for the stage win, but he was in that position where it really was going to fall on his shoulders to do chasing. And if he chased it all the way in and did catch Quintana, somebody else probably would have landed the sucker blow and he would have lost out that way. So maybe he was playing it cleverly to make sure that he came out with something, because with the time bonus it meant that he got the red jersey. So yeah, I think he can look forward to wearing that for a couple of days, although I say that, who knows what will happen.
Who knows who else did you speak to at the finish?
Well, had a quick chat with Hugh Carthy, because I thought he was instrumental in what EF Education First were doing on that final climb. They were really there looking strong. They had Higuita up there as well, a young Colombian climber. And just a word on the number of Colombian fans who've been here these opening couple of days. I mean, it really is extraordinary. It's like a home fixture for the Colombian riders. So many of them wearing the Colombian football jersey or waving flags. And they stand outside the team buses chanting Uran or Chavez, or, well, it'll be Higuita next, I guess.
Well, and if, yes, if you look at GC early days, but there are four in the top eight at the moment.
Exactly. So, yeah, I thought Hugh Carthy rode really well today, and I wanted to get his thoughts on today's race. Hugh, you were really active on that climb around 25k from the finish. The work you did enabled Rigoberto Urán to be exactly where he needed to be to get into the move. Are you pleased with how it worked out? Was that always the plan?
Yeah, I like to think I had a small influence in the way the race played out. The objective was for me to ride the whole climb to reduce a group for Sergio, maybe to 30, 40 riders, and then we'd sprint with him. But as it turned out, I think Valverde was the first to really attack. A couple of guys attacked and got away, Formolo. But yeah, Valverde and Higuita went, and then after that it was just kind of two riders, and that group of a few smaller groups got together, I don't know how many, 10 or 15 in the front, and then behind us in a group with a few teammates, a bigger group, a couple of minutes behind. So yeah, I think overall a good day. Urán jumped up the classification. I think he asserted himself on the race. It's what we'd hoped to do in a different way, but it worked out quite nicely, and we adapted well to the circumstances, and I think it was a good day.
Lots of training camps happen around here. Many people will be familiar with the roads. Are you one of the riders who've trained around here? And does it make a difference racing on roads where some riders might really know them like the back of their hand?
It makes a difference to those who know. Yeah, I've trained around this area a lot. I mean, I usually go to Benidorm. never been to Calpe, never stayed in Calpe. But yeah, some of the more interior roads that we were on earlier in the stage, I knew a lot of those. And it helps, you know, it was a hard day up and down and in and out, and it helps, and you know, when those little hard sections are going to end and they're going to start, and you can keep the morale up, and good to know some of the roads. In the final, the roads I wasn't too sure on when we went over the climb and down, but by that point it was small groups and there's not much advantage in knowing the roads too much.
Lastly, I haven't had a chance to talk to you since you won a stage at the Tour of Switzerland, but did that feel like you kind of made a bit of a breakthrough to get a first victory at World Tour level? Did it feel like you've swollen in confidence a bit?
After a win you're always after a win, but to do it in that kind of way, and I thought my form had ended a bit. I was tired, so it was nice to end the first half of the season like that. It was what it was. You can't dwell on it. You can't live in the past and just carry on and do my job and try and win another race. Try and help win other riders win other races. So yeah, nothing changes.
Oh, well, that's stage two done and dusted, Richard. Missing you, obviously. You know,
thanks,
it's not the
Simon.
Same without having a post-stage wind down and a lovely glass of cerveza. But you know, it's nice to know you'll be out here at the weekend.
Yeah, I've got a bit of FOMO actually, Lionel. I'd like to be there, especially yesterday. I was at a wedding yesterday, and with very patchy 3G connection in the Scottish, not Highlands, but in the sort of remote Scottish countryside. Somebody actually at the wedding came up and told me that Jumbo Visma had crashed in the team time trial. And as I left the wedding at midnight, that was all I knew that had happened. So it was kind of strange. So a while since I felt so at such a distance from a grand tour as it gets underway. But I'm immersed in it now, and I'm very much looking forward to coming out and doing the last 2 weeks, and I think you and I will cross over a bit of the weekend and then for the final week as well. So
indeed,
yeah, should be
just
good.
Just a little word on the area around here, because I've probably given, you know, some of the towns along the coast a little bit of a hard time. I mean, Benidorm is not really my cup of tea, but to be fair, there are some nicer bits. The old town looks nicer. It's just a sort of haphazard way that they allowed development to really take hold. That there's no sort of rhyme or reason really to the tower blocks, and they're not arranged in a particularly attractive way, but the roads inland from the coast are really stunning, and they went through some very pretty villages, and I got a different appreciation for this stretch of coastline, an area I have actually cycled in quite a lot in the past. We've come to training camps and been based in this very place, Altea, before, so I know this coast road and some of the climbs quite well, but they really did a good job on routing the stage inland today. So more of the same tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the last time the Vuelta went through Benidorm and up to Calpe a couple of years ago, it was a coastal stage, which you know, had its own attractions, I suppose, but today looked absolutely beautiful. Yeah, really stunning countryside. Before we go, Lionel, shall we do a few thank yous to friends of the podcast? First of all, I'd like to say a big thank you. These are all actually recent sign-ups, so thank you if you've signed up in the last few days, perhaps attracted by your lunch with Jonathan Vauters, which was released a couple of weeks ago now. So a big thank you to Madeline Rasmussen, to Kim Gerhardsen, to Kaylor Habur, to Laura Messiger-Mata, Laura Messiger of Eurosport. What took you so long to sign up, Laura? Mark Ford, Raz Cohen, Michael Halpin, Jiri Duzar, Richard Firth, that'll be, Toby Wilson, Daniel Haddo, and James Hull.
And a big thank you to Samuel Thompson, Finbar O'Halloran, Mark Shannon, Sandy Forster, Andrew Gilbert, Neil McLean, James Plum, David Donnelly, and Richard Morris. Thank you very much for signing up as a friend of the podcast. And, your support helps us to cover the Vuelta daily.
Yes, thank you, Lionel, and I'll speak to you tomorrow.
Yes, I will, Richard. Yeah, let's hope tomorrow's stage is a humdinger as well. Yeah, come out and wrap up. Yeah.